All right, we welcome you to the Second Court of Appeals. We have two cases on our afternoon docket, and we will proceed through both of them, one after another, unless there's something interesting that happens. The first case we'd like to call is Quick Trip versus Goodwin, individually and on behalf of the estate of Melanie Goodwin and Peggy Goodwin. If the clerk will please announce counsel who will be arguing or at counsel table today. All right, thank you. All right, if we'll begin now with Ms. Peavely?
Peavler, yes.
Peavler, okay. Sorry about that.
That's better than what I
thought. Well, yes, please present to the podium, and you will see the timing and light system on the podium there.
Okay, thank you so much. Do you mind if I keep a stopwatch as well?
No, that's fine. But mine controls.
I understand that. I think I'll honor yours. If it may please the court, counsel. On September 25th, 2007, Melanie Goodwin's life came to a tragic and horrific end. At that point, the Goodwins' lives were changed forever. Peggy and Glenn Goodwin have and are living a parent's worst nightmare. They are hurt. They are grieving, and they are angry, and they have every right to be. But their anger in this case is misplaced. Ernesto Reyes acted alone in kidnapping, raping, murdering, and burning the body of Melanie Goodwin. It did so without any knowledge of Quick Trip, any cooperation, participation, or encouragement by Quick Trip. Ernesto Reyes alone was charged with, tried for, and convicted of capital murder. He is now serving a life sentence for the atrocities that he committed against Melanie Goodwin. The Goodwins, however, blame Quick Trip because Quick Trip provided the location where their daughter and her killer encountered each other. The Supreme Court has long held, however, that there is neither a legal nor moral obligation to guard against that which cannot be seen. And that is the key issue in this case. This case turns on foreseeability. Typically, before the Delago case, foreseeability was determined by the Timberwalk factors. There was no prior crime at this store. No Timberwalk factors were at play. And so this case rises and falls on Delago. And Delago is the only reason that we're here today. Although the trial judge repeatedly expressed that he was conflicted about how to handle this case, he stated during the charge conference, and I quote, "I was going to grant summary judgment if it weren't for Delago." Consequently, the plaintiffs have massaged and stretched the facts to try to fit them into the mold of Delago, but one overarching feature of Delago has thwarted their attempts, and that is a quote where it says in Delago at page 768, "It was very, very obvious that a brawl was imminent. If you did not see it, you were blind or deaf or didn't care." Here, in contrast, Melanie's rape, murder, and the burning of her body was anything but obvious. The court should have an opportunity to review the video, and without knowing the outcome, nobody would look at that video and go, "It's obvious. He is going to kidnap, rape, murder, and burn the body of a stranger." The Delago case is distinguishable on the facts, and this is an important point because the Delago court repeatedly warned that the opinion was, quote, "a narrow and fact-specific holding," and that's at page 774 of Delago, and it does not announce a general rule. They're not creating new law with Delago. Sure, now we can look back and say Ernesto was a bad guy, but that's because we have the benefit of hindsight. Hindsight is not foreseeability. In fact, it's the exact opposite, the antithesis of foreseeability.
And in Delago, let me ask a question. Weren't there some little incidents before the big incident? In other words, there was some shoving and pushing and perhaps already minor assaults that took place?
Correct. And if it pleases the court, I have provided a handout to counsel, a demonstrative exhibit. It's the one that stated distinguishing factors. And one of the first factors is exactly the point that Justice Livingston just raised. And that is that there was immediately preceding conduct, and I'm focusing on the word immediately, that went on for 90 minutes before the actual brawl occurred. In our case, by contrast, there was nothing that happened before this other than Mr. Reyes voiced to Quick Trip that certain things had happened in his past but didn't give any indication exactly as to when. Another distinguishing factor, and I'll focus more on the shoving in 1 second, is what I have listed as issue number two, and that is in Del Lago, the immediately preceding conduct occurred on Del Lago's property. The employees were there. They watched it. They observed it. They were present. They saw the demeanor. They saw the tension. They saw the people bowing up and pushing and shoving and cursing and threatening. Here, by contrast, and I'll direct you to the second page of the handout, if you look at the map, our store was located at letter A. The prior conduct on which plaintiffs claim this occurrence was foreseeable happened at C and D, relations of Mr. Reyes, domestic relations. Quick Trip wasn't present for it. Quick Trip couldn't observe it, and Quick Trip has no idea what really happened. In fact, the story that Reyes told Quick Trip is that he was fighting in self-defense because his brother had punched him and picked up a bat. So there's differing interpretations. Quick Trip didn't have the opportunity to observe any of this. All it observes is what you can see on the tape, and that is a calm and rather courteous guy. He's polite. He's not rude to anybody. He doesn't assault anybody. He doesn't act strange. But he tells one pathetic story of just not being a great guy. The issue that I think Judge Livingston raised relates more to number four, and that is in Del Lago, they actually observed the pushing and shoving. And what's critical about that is that was the same type of conduct that escalated into the occurrence. Here, we have him busting his girlfriend's cell phone. He borrowed her car, and she claims he stole it, but he brought it right back. And then he got in a fight with his brother and busted his nose. They are all domestic disputes. There is no natural escalation of getting in a fight with your girlfriend or your brother that would make someone think that they would go attack a random stranger, and not just attack them, but rape them, murder them, and then dump their body and pour gasoline on it. It's just not, it doesn't become very, very obvious that this is exactly what was about to happen, as is true in Del Lago.
And do his statements on the tape, which I have not yet seen, but will, do his statements about these other two incidents, do they indicate whether they occurred or had occurred that very day or evening?
I'm glad you asked that. As a matter of fact, the incident, we introduced evidence from the criminal trial of the girlfriend and of a gentleman named Josh Cantrell, who was with the defendant, Ernesto Reyes, criminal defendant, the day of. And according to Josh Cantrell, he was with Reyes that whole day, so the incident with the brother presumably happened before that. Ms. Andrea Alexander, the girlfriend, testified that the incident with the phone and the car happened 2 days before this incident. So while plaintiffs try to characterize it as an ongoing crime spree, it's really just sporadic domestic problems he's having with his family. The other significant difference between Del Lago and our case is in Del Lago, it's the same people that are involved in the escalation. It's the same people pushing and shoving that eventually get in a fight. Here, it's a complete stranger to these two prior events. And so there's no reason Quick Trip should anticipate that some stranger would be brought into his domestic squabbles, much less that it would escalate to such a severe point. I have two other points on the distinguishing factor sheet, and those lead me to my second point, which is the first reason this case should be reversed and rendered is because there is no evidence of foreseeability. which is required both to establish a duty and to establish the proximate cause element. In addition, there is zero evidence of causation in this case, and that's what I'd like to focus on next, and again, the significant distinctions between Del Lago and Goodwin prove important here. If you look at issue number seven, in Del Lago, the defendant affirmatively took actions that exacerbated and fueled the fire of all these tensions. They knew these people were drunk. They continued to serve them alcohol. They went so far as to stay open later to make more money because these drunk people are buying a lot of alcohol, and continued to fuel the rage. Then they funneled the warring factions between a single exit, pushing and shoving them, cursing at them, further contributing to the tension and even initiating the contact that ended up in the melee. Here, by contrast, the only evidence of any affirmative action that Quick Trip took vis-a-vis Mr. Reyes was they gave him a soda and a Pop-Tart from the clerk's lunch. These are conciliatory, humanitarian efforts. They're not fueling a rage to go out and murder somebody. Quick Trip did nothing to provide him weapons, to intoxicate him, to give him drugs or alcohol. They just helped out a guy who was in need. That's a far, far cry from a substantial factor in causing the incident. The flip side of that is, in Del Lago, as in here, the plaintiffs claimed there were actions that should have been taken that were not. In our case, there's no evidence to support what would have happened if those actions had been taken. In Del Lago, by contrast, they presented ample evidence of what would have happened. For example, the night before, the same people, the same warring factions had been in a fight or in arguments, growing tensions. The security came in and the situation was diffused. That's some evidence of what would happen if you had security there.
Was it really necessary to put on evidence that if they had called, followed their security policy, called the police, had him removed from the premises, he would have never encountered Ms. Goodwin?
It is necessary to do that, especially where the primary argument in this case is about response time for the police. The plaintiffs presented no evidence of how long the police would take to get there and what they would do if they arrived, what priority they would give the call. And I just happened to notice a couple of weeks ago, I was flipping through the paper, and the Dallas Morning News, Wednesday, May 8th, the title is Accent and Rapid Talk Cited in 911.
No, that's not in the record that you're reading from.
Okay.
Please stay with the record, if you will.
I will, yes, thank you. But the point is, it's commonly known that police are often criticized for not responding more quickly.
Well, let's go to the bottom line in terms of your argument, which is that the conduct that was observed by the attendant, Mr. Chin, and does he pronounce his name Andika?
Anyadike.
Over a course of time, it's clear to anybody watching the video, first off, what is your assessment of what Judge Robeson said? That's quoted in the appellee's brief on page 2 about the video. Do you agree with that?
I do, Your Honor. Well, I agree that about its importance. I
the
don't
significance
agree.
Of the video.
I do, yes, sir.
And that the video is some evidence to be considered by the jury.
Absolutely.
So it's not when you have the video, you're beyond the question of scintilla.
I disagree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, I'm not surprised. But let me just go on with you and say, if Quick Trip's policy had been followed and Mr. Race had been removed, isn't that a but-for situation which allows a jury to consider that action was not taken to provide a safe premises for invitees coming on the premises?
To get to that point, and again, it's the but-for analysis is based on substantial factor. And to get to that analysis, there has to be some evidence that what would have happened if he had been removed. Would he have just been told to walk off and left on his own?
The question of what would have happened here is, and the speculation of what could have happened, and then the speculation of what might have happened to cause the two people to even be together in a car, and what happened after they got in the car, and what happened where they went, and all of those things are speculation, but we do know the end result.
Correct.
And the end result is Mr. Reyes and Ms. Goodman came together at the Quick Trips location, and then whenever they left there, she was raped, murdered, and burned.
The key
evidence. And it was done by Mr. Reyes.
The key evidence we are missing, however, is whether she consented to give him a ride or whether he kidnapped her, because this is a premises liability case.
And I understand that. And the testimony from other witnesses was, and that was given to the jury, was about her habitual conduct and about her habits and about what she knew, just the kind of person she was. Those kinds of things are certainly evidence that went to the jury and that the jury had available to, and it's in its analysis of answering the questions submitted by the judge on the special issues.
Under Texas law that relates to inferences, each of those bits of evidence, such as she never had done it in the past, that's incompetent evidence to be considered. It does not support an inference because it doesn't show a habit. It just shows a situation she may never have been presented with before. It's not a regular occurrence as required to be competent habit evidence.
That's your position in the case, if I can help you by summarizing, that Del Lago controls and that Goodman's case is so different that Del Lago prevents recovery.
That is the bottom line, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Donheiser.
Good afternoon. May it please the court? I'm going to start a little bit backwards because of some of the questions and the argument we've just heard, and start with the proximate cause about what would have happened. We think you don't have to look any further than the question of what would have happened in reasonable probability based on all of the circumstances had Chin picked up the phone and said, I'm going to call the police. Forget about that the Denton police are so incompetent that we know they couldn't have gotten there in 45 minutes. But if he just threatened to do it, what would have happened? We have from Reyes' own conduct in the video what he would have done. Because at exactly 1 o'clock on the video, and the video has the time at the top. I guess some of you have seen it, some of you haven't. At exactly 1 o'clock, there's this exchange between Chin and Reyes. Chin says that the Denton police are harassing. He's characterizing them as kind of hard asses. And what does Reyes say? He says, I'd better get walking. Now, watch it on the video. Don't listen to me. Don't look at any transcription. Watch it on the video. Is this two guys joking? Or is he serious? When we hear someone saying something facetiously, we can tell. It's in the voice. It's in the facial expressions. These guys weren't joking. Reyes was afraid of the police, and for very, very good reasons. I would start walking. Ms. Peevler described him as polite and not rude. He's certainly not physically aggressive to Chin, a man his size, maybe even a little bigger, a little taller at least. But polite? Count the F words. It's bombarding throughout. We have customers coming and going throughout this 40 minutes of video. It covers 55 minutes of time, but 15 minutes are cut out. 40 minutes. How many times he uses it? There's also the incident at the very beginning. Quick Trip thinks the only other time Reyes talked to another customer other than Melanie. Quick Trip thinks he asked this other man for a ride. I'm not going to say what I think it says. Listen to it carefully. It certainly sounds like he's soliciting a crime. That's what we think it says, he's saying. This isn't a polite man. This is someone who's hanging around for an hour at 1 o'clock in the morning, no car, no money, no phone, no friends, no family, nowhere to go, warrants out for his arrest. Now, Quick Trip says, well, we don't know what those warrants were for. Who cares? It shows his desperation to get away. Warrants out for his arrest. He says he's afraid of the police. Says, I better get walking when they're mentioned. Somebody mentions to me that the Denton police are harassing. I'm not going to say I'm going to get walking. Quite frankly, I'd probably say good. Because I'm not wanted for anything. I'm not afraid of them.
So is it your position that all this knowledge that Reyes shared with Mr. Chen really created the foreseeability and the duty to take some action?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There's another exchange. It's cited in our brief. I don't have the time right off. Where Reyes finally gets a hold of an alleged friend on the phone. He's borrowing Chin's phone. And then hangs up and tells Chin he won't get me. Come get me. He won't come get me. What does Chin respond? Well, did you beat him up too? Again, don't listen to me saying it. Don't read the words in my brief where I quote it. Watch it. Tell me whether a reasonable jury could conclude they were joking or not. I don't think they were. I think Chin actually wanted to know, did you beat this friend up too? Delago specifically says that Timberwalk factors, the analysis of prior crimes on or near the premises, their proximity, recency, similarity, are not the only way to show foreseeability. Delago was an unusual case. And so the Supreme Court looked at all the totality of the situation, all of the factors. This is an unusual case, and all we're asking this court to do is exactly the same thing. Look at all of the evidence, the totality of the situation, all of the factors as a whole. Quick Trip wants you to basically ignore the forest for the trees. Look at each individual statement fact that was known. Well, you don't know what the warrants are for, so you can't count that. That tree's gone. You can't, he broke his brother's nose, and I think Ms. Peebler's right. I think it was 2 days before. This was the evening, 12 in the evening. He'd been walking around all day after having been thrown out of his house. Walking around all day without any money, food, ends up at the Quick Trip. Nowhere to go. So you can't, that's a domestic fight. Oh, you can't look at the cell phone. Don't fall for that. Don't fall for looking at each individual tree. Look at the whole picture, the whole forest.
What was the occurrence on the premises of Quick Trip?
The abduction.
Okay, and Judge Robeson included an instruction. Where was that proposed by one side or the other? Because he's taking a definition of restrain and using it to define abduct and,
Your Honor, it was not requested by either party. Judge Robeson thought on his own that the jury needed to know what an abduction was, and he took it out of Texas Penal Code.
But that's not out of the Texas Penal Code. That's a definition of restrain that he then says defines abduct. And it's not out of the Texas Penal Code. It's
well,
a combination of two things.
The wording is. It's directly out of 20.01. He changed restrain to abduct.
Well, okay, but there's a difference between unlawful restraint and abduction, as abduction is an element of kidnapping. You recognize that?
I'm not sure I agree, Your Honor. I will have to look at it.
Was there any objection to that? Did Quick Trip object
yes.
to that instruction being included in the court's charge?
Yes.
And how, what is your argument that that is not a comment by the judge on what the, because what the occurrence on the premises of Quick Trip was a contested issue?
Yes, absolutely it was, Your Honor.
So why is that not a comment by the judge on what the occurrence was?
The instruction does not say the occurrence was the abduction or non-abduction on the premises.
But you argued, or the trial counsel argued that instruction to the jury in closing argument, that that was...
That there was...
That definition was there so that the jury could use that in determining the occurrence on the premises of Quick Trip, correct?
We argued that the occurrence was an abduction and that the abduction was on the premises. Yes, Your Honor, and there's plenty of evidence to support that.
And that evidence is the friend saying she wouldn't have done that?
That's part of it, not just the friend and the parents, but also the last 5 minutes of the video. Again, this video is crucial to watch carefully and repeatedly. The jury asked for a better television to watch it. Judge Robeson says he watched it two or three times. Watch the sequence of events from the time Melanie has entered the store and gone into what I'll call the back. It's sort of a side that you can barely see to get chocolate milk. Reyes, at that point, is pacing outside, starts peering in and sees her, comes all the way around, makes a beeline for her. There is a conversation that is very hard to hear. I listened to it as well as I could. I can't really determine anything that was said between the two of them. But you can tell from the voices that it's mainly Reyes talking. Halfway through this brief conversation, Chin goes back there. Chin testifies that from what he heard of the conversation, Melanie was loath to give him a ride. That's his word, loath. Not hesitant, not reluctant, loathed. Now, maybe Chin doesn't know what the word means, but the jury was entitled to believe he does, that it is not just hesitant, but with loathing, disgust, repulsion. You then see them come back from this corner where you can barely see them. They do not act like two people who have, one has agreed to give the other a ride. Melanie is talking on her cell phone. Reyes comes following her, not with her saying, thank you for giving me a ride. He's not saying, Chin, thanks for all the help, I got a ride. He just walks behind her. She goes to the counter. He doesn't wait for her. He goes out. He doesn't go to her car to the left. He goes to the right. He knew where her car was. He had been outside when she pulled up. He goes outside to the right. When Melanie leaves, she goes to the door, goes to the left. There's no, come on, let's go. There doesn't even seem to be eye contact. You've got this little packet in front of you. You've got this picture that they blow up in their brief saying, oh, they're lying. She does look that way. They take a screenshot off of it where she's looking at the door as she's pushing it open. She's not looking at the guy lurking over to the right. Watch the video. See how they act. This is what the jury based it on. They do not act like people who have agreed to a ride share. She then goes off to the left, and he waits, then comes up and crosses behind her, and that's all we see. So it's not just habit. It's what, when two people have agreed, I'll give you a ride, we know how they behave. We see how they act. We can use our common sense and experience as human beings. And this is not how they act. Reyes wasn't even acting like he was leaving. He didn't say anything to Chin. the man, he'd spent the last 55 minutes pouring his life story out to. The man who had given him his own lunch. So that is the additional evidence we think shows that there was an abduction.
So at what point is it your position that the duty actually arose?
Your Honor, I think by within 12 minutes of Rhea's arrival, the story was out. Very little of the story comes later. There is a little bit. But within 12 minutes, he comes in at 12:49 something. By a little after 1, his Quick Trip describes as his domestic woes, and which we think is much more serious than that, a desperate man on the run, has come out. There's another half hour or more where he's lurking around. Yes, there is no evidence that the Denton police could have gotten all the way out to the Quick Trip in 35 minutes. But we think Denton County jurors can use their common sense and experience and say, yeah, they would have gotten there. Or if he threatened or actually called, Reyes would have beat it. He would have left just like he said he would. Are there no further questions?
No one ever asked him to leave, did they?
No. Never asked him to leave. He says, and that's another thing I was accused of misrepresenting, and I apologize, it was a typo on the record reference. He did say, I will stay there all night until they kick me out. It's at 12:59:03. I apologize for the typo, but for Quick Trip to say it never happened is incorrect. It was just a typo. It's 12:59:03. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donheiser. Ms. Peavler.
I listened intently to everything Mr. Donheiser had to say, and I never heard why and on what basis this incident was imminent. The prior incidents happened 2 days before. We're not sure how long. Why was something bound to happen? What made it very, very obvious that if you didn't see it, you were blind, deaf, or didn't care, that Reyes would pick out a stranger, a woman, to kidnap, rape, murder, and burn that night? And the fact is, it's just not there. Mr. Donheiser has been piecing together little pieces to support this inference. First of all, I think it's undisputed. If you look at that video, it does not show what happens when they leave the sidewalk. You see them both out there. You see him walk along the front of the car. She gets in the driver's side. He goes to the passenger side. He makes a call from her phone. There's no evidence of a shuffle of force, so it's complete speculation to say whether she let him do it, whether he forced it. It's complete speculation. Mr. Donheiser wants you to do is ignore all contrary evidence, such as her compassionate nature. She never knew a stranger. She was a very loving and caring person.
So and she consented to give a ride to this desperate man and ended up dead.
It is a contributing factor, yes, Your Honor. And the city of
and the jury decided that the evidence was adequate to answer the questions in the manner they did upon observing all the people, hearing all the evidence, and we're not asked here to just be a 13th juror in the case.
Correct.
Which is what I'm hearing you say, I think, because you're asking us to say, wait a minute, this jury had this evidence, came to this conclusion, but it's not right. I hear your arguments about the law. But I've heard no arguments that you've made that there wasn't adequate evidence for the jury to reach the conclusions that they reached based upon the jury's, our standard of review, that if there is some evidence to support the jury finding that we're supposed to give that deference.
And I'm I'm sorry that I haven't made myself clear, because I am trying to make that argument. The City of Keller versus Wilson, the Supreme Court says, in claims or defenses supported by only meager circumstantial evidence, and that's what we have here. We don't know what happened. The evidence does not rise above a scintilla if jurors would have to guess whether a vital fact exists. These jurors have to guess whether or not she was abducted. There is no way to know. There's no physical direct evidence of an abduction. And the court further almost identified this exact situation in the City of Keller. Our Supreme Court said, in fact, when injury or death occurs without eyewitnesses and only meager circumstantial evidence suggests what happened, we cannot disregard other meager evidence of equally likely causes. And when you start going through each little tree that Mr. Donheiser talked about, there is an equally plausible explanation that she was consenting. For example, she may have been averse to give him a ride at first, but we hear her on the phone say, seems pretty normal, and then she may have changed her mind when he talked to her outside. We are requiring the jury to speculate, and speculation is not evidence. Statements about what she hasn't done in the past is no evidence. It's not a habit. It's not she has been repeatedly asked and always turned it down. They just never knew it to happen. That's not habit evidence. There's no evidence to support that she would not have given a ride to him. And in fact, you look at the police report and they concluded she did. So the fact of the matter is the evidence that does exist that was presented to the jury is legally insufficient. And even stacking all these zeros, a stack of zeros still gives you zero.
Police report and evidence?
It is, Your Honor. I can get you the exhibit number, but it is in evidence and it's cited in my brief. The other thing I'd like to point out is in the record on page 135 of the reporter's record, volume 4, the plaintiffs did ask for this kidnapping instruction. They had asked for it in a prior draft. There was a lot of informal talk, and Mr. Broom did not realize the court had added it per his instruction, and he says, Mr. Broom says, the plaintiff has requested a jury instruction to aid the following instruction under Texas criminal law. A crime of kidnapping includes abduction by force, intimidation, or deception. And the court notes, oh, you must not have realized I did put that in. And so the court, by adopting the plaintiff's instruction, is embracing his theory. And the plaintiffs took full advantage of it during the closing argument by stressing, look at this instruction. It tells you what the occurrence is because it is the only type of conduct mentioned, so you should focus on that. It is a comment on the weight of the evidence. In sum, there is nothing on this record that makes it very, very obvious Reyes was going to murder a stranger. Foreseeability doesn't exist. Without foreseeability, there can be no liability. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peavler. Thank you, Mr. Donheiser. Other counsel, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate all of your arguments and your exceptional briefing today. The court will take your case under advisement now, and your case is submitted. You all are excused.